Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How well does your brain work? And is it possible to not only hang on to your mental acuity as you age, but even improve your level of brain function? Dr. Richard Restak is a neuroscientist, neuropsychiatrist, and clinical professor of neurology at George Washington University's Medical Center. His new book pulls together key concepts from a wealth of new research on how the brain works and the surprising amount of influence we have on how well it works. It's called Think Smart, a neuroscientist's prescription for improving your brain's performance, and we are delighted to have him here to discuss it. Richard, welcome to Think.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You make the point that getting older is not the same thing as aging, or at least it doesn't have to be from a neurological standpoint.
That's correct. It's an old view that as one gets older, necessarily the brain stops functioning at its best. We make the distinction between what we call fluid intelligence and crystallized intelligence. Fluid intelligence is that quick, rapid sort of response that we can make to a question, and that does fall off a bit as people get older. That's why when you turn on a show like Jeopardy or something, you don't see people, older people on there usually. They may well know the answer, but they wouldn't get it out so quickly. What is not affected by getting older is what's called crystallized intelligence, and that's knowledge, things that you've learned over the years, sort of common sense, observations, the ability to anticipate the consequences of one's behavior and actions and things like that. And also crystallized intelligence includes all the things that you've learned in your profession, so that now that we're in a situation economically where there's going to be more and more people remaining in the workplace for longer periods of time, that does not at all imply that they're going to be deficient or unable to perform. They have, you know, a lifetime of knowledge that they've accumulated and can use.
Something I found really fascinating is the research that's been done that shows that older folks, as they lose maybe some of that fluid intelligence and that quickness, they have ways of compensating for that that may mean their performance doesn't fall off at all.
Yeah, there's a famous story about Arthur Rubinstein, the concert pianist. He was playing well up into his 80s, and people asked him, well, how is it you can continue to play and without showing any fall off in your performance? And his answer was, well, I play fewer pieces, I practice longer, and I use a few tricks so that when I'm playing a piece that has calls for a slow portion, I play it even slower than usual, so that when I play the fast part, no one notices that I'm not playing as quickly as I did years ago. So that's really what's called for, is a way of looking at the area that may be a problem and coming up with new strategies or tricks, things like that.
And what kinds of tasks does an older brain tend to handle better than a young adult brain?
Those that require judgment, those that require thinking about the vast amount of material and kind of getting the implications of it, that based on experience. I mean, you can look at Captain Sullenberger, for instance, a good example of exactly what we mean by being able to instantaneously make a judgment, which turned out to be perfect, and based on all these years of experience. That would have taken a lot of courage and perhaps foolhardiness on the part of a younger pilot who wasn't as experienced as he was and didn't know how to do what he did landing that airplane on the Hudson River.
And those of us who are still relatively young can create what you call a cognitive reserve. Talk about what it is and then how we build one.
Well, I like to think of cognitive reserve in banking terms. As you build up your funds over the years, you have more and more money, well, then you can expend more. You have more to spend, so to speak. And cognitive reserve is building up knowledge and information and skills and cognitive processes such as memory, reading, observations, and building these up so that you have this reserve so that later on in life, if the brain does start to show some slight fall off, it doesn't have quite the implication as it would with someone who had a lessened cognitive reserve, just as with someone who has a small amount of money in a bank is much more sort of susceptible to economic downturns than somebody who has quite a bit.
So it's like saying the old saying where you talk about someone forgetting more than somebody else has ever learned.
Yeah, that's right.
We hear so often these days, Richard, about mental exercises, and you can go into any bookstore and there's 1,000 books with little tricks and games and things. What kinds of mental exercises are in fact the best for stimulating the brain?
Well, I can reduce those books to just a couple of sentences. I'd be happy to do that for your listeners.
Yeah.
Because what you're really trying to do is to build up what's called working memory. Now, someone says, well, what exactly is working memory? So I can give you a good example. If I say to you, Chris, well, name for me, and I'm not going to do it, but I'm going to just give you the example. Name for me all the presidents from Obama back to Abraham Lincoln, and you know, just tick them off. As you would do that, that would be a test of your memory, because you have to remember the names. But if I then said to you, well, why don't you just give them to me according to party? So let's just hear the Democrats, starting with Obama. Now, to do that, you've got to keep all these names in mind and then select just the Democrats. And then I would say, all right, well, then let's do the Republicans. And you would say, okay, so you start with Bush and you go back to Lincoln in this case. So that's working memory. I could even make it harder and say, well, let's give me all the presidents in alphabetical order. Then you start, let's see, Bush, Carter, that sort of thing. That's working memory, and that's the area of the brain that is most linked with intelligence, IQ, and being able to fend off dementia or senility, as they used to call it years ago, Alzheimer's.
So are there other exercises that aren't really all that useful?
That aren't what?
Are there other kinds of books and exercises of this type that aren't that useful? Is it just as good to play Sudoku or something like that?
Well, you can if you enjoy that. I make the point in the book, you have to do mental exercises that are of interest to you. That's the first thing. For instance, my wife plays Sudoku and does crossword puzzles, and I'm writing my books in the morning. So I don't know who gets the greater mental exercise. It's just different ways of doing it. You look for something that challenges a part of the brain that you have difficulty with. If you're not all that good at crossword puzzles, then that would be a great exercise for you to do. If it's something that you just get fine to do easily and it's not a problem, then go on to something that's a bit more of a challenge.
And even video games can play a role.
Well, video games are interesting that you bring that up, because there's definite proof that the video games can give you a lot of brain enhancement. I mean, it gives you things like your overall reaction time is improved, your eye-hand coordination is improved, and your manual dexterity becomes better. But most of all is what happens in terms of vision. Your visualization skills are improved, particularly picking out contrast. You're better able to work in, like, three dimensions, and you can, you know, divide attention rapidly and switch your attention and increase the number of things that you're able to pay attention to at one time. Now, that's a lot of brain power there. And I happen to think that that's a better test and a better challenge for the brain than these so-called brain gyms.
Hmm.
I mean, a brain gym is okay, these computerized programs, but they're a little bit like the difference between, jogging on a treadmill and jogging out on the beach. One is challenging, alive, and it really keeps you wanting to return to it. And the other one is just sort of, I guess I'll do it because it's good for me.
What's so interesting about the video game thing is that I think a lot of us as parents are really concerned that our kids are playing too much of this stuff. Should we relax a little bit about that as long as they're getting enough stimulation and physical exercise elsewhere?
Well, it's a trade-off. There's a certain, as I put in the book, I don't think anybody should do this more than 3 or 4 hours a week, and certainly for not more than an hour or so at a time, because then you begin to develop those things which I just mentioned, but you sort of... knowledge becomes a little more superficial. You have probably sometimes a great difficulty kind of sitting still, being still, concentrating, reading passages which may require reflection, things like that. So that becomes harder to people that are just playing video games all the time. So I'm strongly in favor of the use of video games, but I think they should be just like medications, taken as needed in small doses.
Why is it so beneficial to work with our hands?
Well, that's one of the things that in our culture, with the exception of surgeons and people like that, the vast, vast majority of people are working in jobs that require very little in the way of manual dexterity. In fact, there's proof showing that as you enhance your mental dexterity, you increase your longevity as well as increase your cognitive processing. Because the hand has a very large representation within in the brain, and the fine finger movements as you become skilled in something of interest. Once again, it has to be of something of interest. It could mean taking up piano when you're an adult, or in many cases, returning to it because you would have had it as a child and you return to it. So there's a lot of good things that you can take up, whichever would interest you, which involve manual dexterity. And that's one of the things I mentioned in Think Smart that you don't see too much emphasized.
Dr. Richard Restak is my guest. He is clinical professor of neurology at George Washington University's Medical Center. We're talking about his new book, Think Smart, a neuroscientist's prescription for improving your brain's performance. We'll resume our conversation after the break and talk a little bit about the benefits of physical exercise. You're welcome to join the conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also join the station. Make sure that we continue to have great programming on KERA. Make sure that the Think program specifically stays strong and vibrant by calling 1-800-456-5372. You can also go online and make a contribution at kera.org. We are down to $69,831 to raise. We've had recent contributions of $365. We had a day sponsor. We've had a friend join in the last hour, $1,500 level. We've had some $50 contributions and $120 contributions. It all adds up, as I know Betsy Lewis, our assistant producer here on Think, knows very well. Hey, Betsy.
Good afternoon, Chris. We have a few people to thank also. There is Tiffany Houston from Keller, and Tiffany is making her contribution in memory of Jacob Coment. So thank you so much for that, Tiffany. Also, Melanie Murphy of Fort Worth and James Johnson of Azle. Harvest Moon of Grand Prairie, and Heather Smith of Plano. So we're hearing from all over the Metroplex, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Wherever you listen, whether it's here in North Texas or somewhere far away because you listen on the internet, we would love to hear from you right now at 1-800-456-5372. Want to thank Gail Cope in Dallas, Susan Barnett in Dallas, Reba Watson in Arlington, and James Monroe in Dallas. You can also go online and make your contribution at kera.org. That's a very popular way, and it does count toward the overall goal.
You're listening to Dr. Restak talking about improving your brain function with his book, Think Smart. And if you join at the $120 level, you can get that book as a thank you gift. You don't have to take the book if you don't want to, but it's just our little way, and it's not a payment for the book, but it's just our little way of saying thank you. And I love that the book is called Think Smart, and Dr. Restak is on Think. And I think that's one of the best things about KERA is it supplies that intellectual energy for the entire North Texas area.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be able to work on a program like this, and we on the Think staff talk about this all the time. The best thing about it is having an audience that sort of understands, and you are part of the mission as well, because we couldn't produce this programming if you didn't get it, if you didn't hunger for things that go beyond sort of soundbite bits of information and really want to understand things. We don't just have someone who thought of some good ideas. We have a neuroscientist giving you this information. Think Smart, as Betsy mentioned, is available at the $120 membership level. Really interesting book, and it would be interesting for older folks, but I have to say I've come to learn about the books that people are going to ask me if they can look at after the show is over, and this is one that I can guarantee half a dozen people I know are going to say, hey, can I have that book once today's show is over? If you would like your copy, give us a call right now, make a $120 contribution, and we'll send it to you with our compliments. We are working on a challenge of $5,000 for today.
Just for today. So $5,000 is a lot of money. You want to be sure that your station, KERA, does not lose out on that wonderful, generous challenge. That's 1-800-456-5372 or online at kera.org.
Yeah, Diane Wenger, a Tarrant County family law attorney, has said she would give the station an additional $5,000 if we can wrap up the drive today. You can help make that possible. 1-800-456-5372 or online at kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, helping you to get ahead in today's tough economy. Hundreds of courses begin this summer. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with Dr. Richard Restak. He's a neuroscientist and neuropsychiatrist and a clinical professor of neurology at George Washington University's Medical Center. His new book, Think Smart, A Neuroscientist's Prescription for Improving Your Brain's Performance, is the topic of our discussion, and it's available at the $120 level when you call 1-800-456-5372. If you want to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. Richard, I have to say I was astounded to read about the difference between people who walk a mile a day as compared with those who don't.
Well, yeah, it can be about a 40% less chance of getting Alzheimer's disease. In fact, one of the insights that's come about is that physical exercise, plays a big role in determining brain health. I mean, that's something that we didn't think about before. But now we know that exercise gives you more new capillaries around the brain, which is gets it more blood supply, more interconnections between the neurons. Then there's actually things called nerve growth factor, which is secreted and helps the brain cells mature. And then the area of the brain that's most important, the frontal area for the so-called executive functions like judgment and sort of what we talked about earlier, consequences and being able to predict how things are going to turn out based on how much work you're putting in and things like that. That's preferentially helped by physical exercise. So it's very important, and it also, of course, cuts down on obesity, which is another second new insight. That is that obesity has more of an effect on creating a probable dementia or Alzheimer than even things that we thought of in the past, like inheritance and gender and things like that. So it's very important to avoid it. You mentioned it on the break. I heard you mention about the fact that the book would be of great interest to the older person, and it would be, but we have to remember that the brain starts to show some diminishment in function in the 20s, in mid to late 20s. So that, you know, it's something a lot of people don't realize, and you can begin to turn that around by getting started on a brain and cognitive enhancing exercises as soon as you can to build up that cognitive reserve we talked about a few minutes ago.
So start before you start to have problems.
Well, before you know that you're starting.
And then there's the rub. You actually recommend eating the fewest number of calories possible in order to maintain an acceptable weight. And you talked about obesity and the links between that and mental decline. What do we think happens when we overeat?
Well, in every animal that you can name, up to the higher apes, things, there have been tests which show that if you cut back on the calories by 30%, you add about 20 to 30% in longevity. They also show that in animals that are calorie deprived, if you want to put it that way, they then begin to maintain their cognitive fitness much longer. So the thought being is that the body will adjust to fewer calories. Now, when someone says, well, how do you prove that with a human? It's very hard to do because the natural lifespan is up in the 70s, so you'd probably have to do a couple hundred years of study before you could say this. Secondly, you can't force people to be on a calorie-restricted diet if they chose not to do it. However, there are people who choose calorie-restricted diets. It's been shown that they have a smaller insulin response to food, and they also keep a lower temperature around the eating situation. So those are the two things that you do see in other animals that you can test for longevity. So you'd say, well, the human being is having the same similar metabolic response, so it suggests that caloric restriction would increase longevity, and also for our topic today would enhance your brain function.
Any chance, Richard, that given the conditions that the earliest humans had to endure in that they spent a lot of time trying to get food and probably often didn't have quite as many calories as we have today, even on a lean day, does that help explain that maybe the development of the human brain throughout evolution?
Well, that's what happens. In other words, the body and the brain adjust to the number of calories that are available. That's why you hear these stories of people having been in prisons and occupations and things like that, being starved down to what you would think would be enough to kill them. But the body does adjust, so it adjusts to a lower calorie intake. And, of course, we know from the study of obesity, it also works the other way. So if there's huge amounts of food being eaten, the body adjusts to it, and then suddenly that becomes the norm.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Megan in Keller. Hey, Megan.
Yes.
Hi, go ahead, please.
Hi. Yes, I am of the demographic that he had mentioned of the late 20s and had changed my diet significantly in my teens, and it has made my life quite different. And that's something that I had not thought of until he had brought it up. My question particularly to him was that I'm one of those people who has a significant notion of photographic memory, and I wondered if that was mentioned in his book and what he had thought, if there are ways to preserve that, because it is quite powerful when you have it, and if he knew, if he had anything to say about that.
Lucky you.
Well, there's a whole section in the book on memory and how to enhance memory by making the topic and subject you're trying to remember much more clarified and much more dramatic, and using methods that enable you to memorize using what they call place, such as your home or the town you're living in. You take certain landmarks and you use them as sort of pegs for you to remember the particular topic or the subjects. Now, the area of photographic memory is very controversial. I mean, I have, in fact, interviewed people who certainly appear to have a photographic memory. There's no doubt about it. You can show them something once and then later test them, and they do seem to be looking almost at a picture. However, if you go to the memory championships, as I was recently, the one in New York, and you actually watch people and interview them who win these memory championships, they don't have photographic memories. They just use these kind of systems that I'm talking about. They become very frank and very good at using them.
And when it comes to tasks that we might have to perform on a pretty regular basis, you actually don't recommend that we memorize them to the extent that they're just rote and we don't have to think about them anymore.
If you have to do something on a regular basis?
Yeah, well, you talk about really being mindful of every little step as opposed to just glossing over.
Oh, yes, right, exactly. To avoid automaticity, if you're trying to learn something, let's say golf or tennis, I mean, you want to get to the point where you concentrate with increased powers of concentration on those areas in which you are most efficient. And that's what I encourage and what's encouraged now by others who have studied high performance, whether it's athletes or whatever it may be. These are people that are able to focus in on areas in which they're deficient and put their time and energy with a high degree of concentration and try to improve it.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Ted in Dallas. Hello, Ted.
Hi, Dr. Restek. I'm a therapist that works with dementia in elder adults and also learning disabilities with kids. I've been reading a lot about this subject for the last 2 years and going to workshops and things and integrating into my practice. How is your book significantly different from all these other books on the market about the same topic?
Well, what I mentioned is I tried to come up with things that we already mentioned about finger dexterity and the working memory, the use of what I call sensory memory, increasing taste and smell abilities, tactile abilities. As you know, there's research showing that some of the first signs of Alzheimer's is a loss of ability of olfaction, smell. Now, that suggests, you know, a possibility that maybe one could lessen the chances of that by increasing your olfactory sense. And I have exercises in the book for which you might be able to do that, smelling herbs and scents and identifying them, and spelled out how you would go ahead and do that.
And one of the things that you write about is that we need to reconsider our concept of retirement. Where do we go wrong now in expecting or hoping to trade work for leisure after several decades of working?
Yeah, the thing about the retirement is that unless you have a very exciting home life, it's a lot duller than most work situations. So that right away when people stop working, they have cut down on their social and intellectual feedback, so to speak. So that now with the economic downturn, there's people that are saying, oh, gosh, I was going to retire, and now I've got to work another 5 years. I say to them, well, you know, how do you like your work? Well, it's okay. I don't mind it. Well, I'd say then, you know, you'd be better off working anyway. Now, if you have someone who because their work makes them depressed, frustrated, angry. They don't want to get up and go to work. Well, that's it's better that they would be in either some other work or retire. But for the large majority of people, there's great more brain enhancement, cognitive enhancement coming from continuing your work.
Let's go next to Arlington and speak to Breach. Hi, Breach.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, go ahead, please.
I just wanted to ask the doctor, about people, elderly people. I have my mother-in-law, possibly, and I was just wondering if there's anything we can do to help with memory loss or, I know she is up in years, but is there stuff in the book that could help encourage her to help her memory?
Well, I mentioned in there different exercises having to do with reminiscence, having to do with years, having the individual try to remember all the events they can from a particular year, or what happened during the when a certain person was president, what happened during the Roosevelt years or Truman years, if it's a person that old, or Eisenhower years, whichever the president you want to select. So the reminiscence, the use of the memory, causes a reconnection of the linkages which were there and which have fallen to the wayside because of disuse. The most important thing is to stimulate curiosity and to keep the mood elevated. You'll find many times that the older person is depressed, and thought to be initially a cognitive problem, a dementia problem, is actually a depression. So you want to make sure and watch for that.
Dr. Richard Restak is my guest. He is clinical professor of neurology at George Washington University's Medical Center. His new book is called Think Smart, A Neuroscientist's Prescription for Improving Your Brain's Performance. We'll return to our conversation in a moment. Take more of your calls at 1-800-933-5372, along with emails to think@kera.org. Right now, we would ask that you give us a call at our other line, our membership line, if you are not actively a member in good standing of KERA. We are on what we hope to be the very last day. We are hearing from lots of you who say, oh my gosh, I've waited this whole drive and now it really is time and I realize that this is the time to make a contribution. You can do it in just 2 minutes at 1-800-456-5372 or online at kera.org. Jeff, that 2 minute interaction with the station gives you an entire year of great radio.
Yeah, it does. And you can know every time you tune in the station, you can know that your contribution is at work, bringing you the programming that you appreciate, the programming that you have grown to expect to be here on KERA when you tune in. It's very easy. Just call 800-456-5372. Go online to kera.org and make your contribution. We do have a challenge, an End the Drive challenge in play, Chris. Today, it's a $5,000 challenge.
$5,000 is a lot of money for us, and it's been offered by Diane Wanger, who is a Tarrant County attorney. She will give it to us here at KERA if we can finish the drive by the end of the day. We have $68,600 left to raise, thanks to all of you who are chipping away at this number, whether at the $5,000 or $1,500 level or at the $120 level. Whatever amount you can contribute will bring that number down and push us toward the very end of the drive and an additional $5,000, which pays for a lot of things here at the station.
We want to say thanks to Madeline Gable in Bedford, Kimberly Turner in Dallas, David Pointer in Fort Worth, Heather Smith in Plano. Also, we heard from Mark Carlson in Athens and Mr. and Mrs. Christy Daniel in Plano and Wesley Sun in Plano as well. Thanks to each of you. How about your call at 800-456-5372? You can join online, of course, at kera.org. We're down in the 60s left to raise, I believe, Chris. I saw that last number.
68,000 something.
Yeah, and so your contribution right now, $68,600 left to go, can help get us closer and closer so that this afternoon we can actually wrap up the drive, finish it today, and say thanks to Diane Wanger for her additional $5,000.
Why is KERA here? Well, the obvious and first answer is to serve you. Why are we able to be here? Because of you. We would not survive if we had to rely only on corporate underwriting and the small amount of money that we get from the federal government. Not to say that both of those things aren't exceptionally important, but they wouldn't give us even half the money it takes to keep a station of this size and, frankly, this caliber on the air. We have to pay for the programming that comes in from the networks, and we pay according to the size of our audience. So so, the more people who listen, and that number is growing all the time. Fortunately and unfortunately, because we, of course, have to pay more in dues to NPR as our audience grows, you're part of that expense. We would ask that you help defray the expense and be part of the solution that keeps public radio strong. 1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number. You could, in addition to getting great radio programming, you could win yourself a really amazing little trip.
Yeah, when we wrap it up, we're going to draw the winner of the British Airways trip, round-trip tickets for two, business class to London, a tour of the BBC studios while you're there, and a $1,000 Marriott gift card. You could win that if you call 800-456-5372. If you go online to kera.org and do your part. At the $120 level, we mentioned before, we have Dr. Rustak's book, Think Smart. You can pick that up with our thanks, with your contribution. It's just $10 a month when you join the station. Of course, the book is out. It's available at bookstores. We want you to know that you can go get it. And you can also support KERA at whatever level you want. But if you want to do both things at once, we'll be happy to send you a copy of the book with our thanks.
Yeah, Jeff and I hear from a lot of publishers and authors who have similar books, and we read through a lot of them. One reason that we chose Dr. Rustak is because his book does have information in it that hasn't appeared elsewhere or that you may not have seen in every little article. We work really hard to make sure that the guests that we bring to you are at the top of their game professionally, that they have exceptional credentials. We're really proud because at the end of the day, we are a local station. But because of the support that we receive from people like you, we are able to get national caliber guests and we hope sound for you like a program that could come from anywhere. Your support makes this all possible at 1-800-456-5372. We have lots of you to thank for that support.
Yes, thanks so much to Susan Wansbro in Dallas, James Lockridge in Dallas, Francis Burpo in Flower Mound. Also heard from Mr. and Mrs. Michael Harrison in Fort Worth. Thank you very much.
Robert Kirkpatrick in McKinney. Thank you. Alexandra Upton in Keller. Susan Mollett in McKinney. And anyone else who is on the line right now at 1-800-456-5372. I have too many numbers in my head. I need to look through Richard Restak's book and figure out how to keep those numbers straight. The number that we want you to call to become a member of KERA is 1-800-456-5372. Going online also counts.
And don't forget, that's KERA.org, by the way. Don't forget that if we wrap the drive up today, KERA will receive an additional $5,000 donation from Diane Wanger, Tarrant County family law attorney. So do your part right now to help us meet that challenge. $5,000 is a lot of money, and it goes a long way around here. So we really would like to wrap up the drive today. Be the next one to call 800-456-5372 or contribute online at KERA.org. And thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, helping you to get ahead in today's tough economy. Hundreds of courses begin this summer. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Dr. Richard Rustak. His new book is called Think Smart, a neuroscientist's prescription for improving your brain's performance. We would love to offer you this book with our compliments when you make a contribution at the $120 level to 1-800-456-5372. If you want to join the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. An email from Mark in Arlington asks about something that you write about a lot in the book. He says, as soon as I retired from the corporate business world, I began taking a 30-minute nap every afternoon after lunch. It definitely makes me feel more alert mentally. Is there any research on the effects of naps on the aging brain?
Yes, that's another area in the book that I cover, which is unique, I think. We've realized just in the last couple of years the real value of naps. I mean, in a very practical-oriented culture like we are, work-oriented culture, naps always were sort of frowned upon. You'd say, someone took a nap, I mean, my gosh, I mean, there's too much work to be done. But what's happening is we've learned that when you take a nap, you actually get as much enhancement and consolidation of information as you would with a whole night's sleep. So that a nap, you wake up if it's timed right. You can't go too long, because if you nap, let's say, an hour and a half or 2 hours, then it interferes with your sleep that evening. But a refreshing nap of 20 minutes to 30 minutes actually causes the brain to sort of, if you want to think of a computer analogy, it just sort of restarts it, reboots it. So it's something that really is very valuable. particularly in terms of with NAPS, with the consolidation and enhancement of learning. You also have what they call offline learning, and you were able to actually learn more material as you've taken this NAP. It helps you to consolidate this information.
An email from Glenn asks about the study of foreign language in keeping the brain healthy.
Studying a foreign language, of course, is a real challenge at any point in adulthood because we've already, the part of the brain has become specialized for the language that we're used to speaking and hearing. When we're younger, when we're infants and even young children, the brain is beginning to incorporate the sounds and language that it's hearing around it. So as a result, that's why a child can learn two languages very easily without an accent in either one of them. So you can't tell where they was their first native language. To a good extent, they've had two native languages. As we get older, it's more difficult, but it's a challenge that fits into the category of what I talked about earlier, things that one can do as you get as you begin to get in your 20s and 30s and 40s and beyond, taking up something that enhances the part of the brain, having to do with a language center, and you then can not only learn this new language, but the new way of thinking. It's Proust that said, a different language, a different way of thinking.
So when you talk about in the book recommending learning three new words a day, it can be English or it can be Chinese or it can be Greek or whatever.
Well, you could do it if you could speak these languages, that's right. But the best thing you could do as a substitute is you use a word that comes from Greek or Latin or German or some other language and then incorporate that into, you take the word for the day. And you get a word every day, like my word for today is meritorious. Now, we all know what meritorious is, but meritorious has to do with excessively fond of one's husband. So I got a kick out of that one. So I look up the excessive love of one's wife, and it's uxorious, UX, having to do with the wife. So there's amusing things, there's exciting things, and always interesting things that you can get from new words.
Dr. Richard Restak is my guest. Our number, 1-800-933-5372, and it's where we find Wendell in Dallas. Hey, Wendell.
Hello there, Chris. Dr. Restak, I was wondering about memory loss in younger people. My wife is an example. She's now a very bright, intelligent, fast-thinking 50-year-old, but she has a problem with memory, and she has for quite some time about
a problem with what?
Place in the past.
With memory.
Memory.
Yes, sir. Even when she was in her 20s and 30s, I used to think that she was just a private person and couldn't remember or said she didn't remember things about her childhood. But in fact, I learned that she really didn't. And there are things we've done since we've been married for 23 years, like vacations, that she really has very little memory about. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what caused that and maybe what we could do to strengthen that.
How old is your wife, approximately?
She's 50.
Well, but you say it's been going on all her life, so it's not likely to be anything of a degenerative or progressive thing. People vary with memory just as they do with everything else. There's variation. Some have superpower memories. They seem born with them. And some people have memories for certain things, memories for faces and names. And I guess those kinds of people go into politics because they can remember everybody they met, remember their name. Other people are very poor at this kind of thing. You can bring yourself up to speed by some of the methods I mentioned in the book. And this, of course, one of the reasons people don't remember, they're not focused and concentrated, they don't try to remember. So if memorizing something becomes self-rewarding, something that's going to help you and you recognize the value of it, you'll then develop your own system for doing it. And I talk about in Think Smart about various ways of augmenting your memory and increasing your ability to remember things without, too much effort.
Why is social interaction so important for brain health?
Social interaction, if you think about the neuron as a solitary cell, can't do much by itself. It has to be part of a circuit, and the neuronal circuits within the brain. And the people are the same way. You know, if you have an isolated person, it's almost like an isolated neuron. It's through its connections with other people. We call it networking and things like that now. But the value of it is you meet new people, new experiences, new ideas, and it gives you the new ways of approaching life. So that's why social isolation and loneliness have such a very deleterious effect on brain function. In fact, there's been several studies showing that loneliness is very much tied up with dementia. And loneliness is very different from depression. The depressed person, you know, they try to avoid people, stay away from people, but the lonely person is just the opposite. They're reaching out frustratingly to try to establish connections that they have difficulty doing for one reason or another.
Well, you mentioned depression. What do we know now about how moods tend to affect mental acuity?
How depression affects mental working?
Well, mood in general, depression
specifically. Well, mood in general, if you think about it, if your mood is down, you tend to see the world from a dour point of view, and you perceive things that are dour and bad, so that the mood actually controls perception, if you will, which seems really kind of an odd way, but that's the way the brain works. So one has to increase and enhance the mood, and because, as I said earlier, if you don't, you can actually begin to show loss of brain power, and many times people who are thought to have Alzheimer's, if you check them, and they're actually, many of them are depressed, and when their mood is improved by an antidepressant medicine, they begin to get better, and the so-called dementia begins to disappear. So mood is very important.
And we're hearing more and more that multitasking may not be all that it's cracked up to be, but I guess it bears repeating. Does multitasking actually prevent the brain from sort of expanding its own capacity?
Multitasking is a challenge in as much as you can't do any two things at once as efficiently and as accurately as you can when you do them separately. Now, you can begin to, and I happen to believe it's already happening with younger people. We talked earlier about video games. I think the brain is changing. The brain's always been changing. It's not changing by biological stimuli, but by technology. Some of the younger people now, teens, early 20s, I mean, they can multitask pretty well. And they're able to do things that people older just couldn't do because their brain isn't capable of it, and it hasn't had this experience. We have this experience called epigenesis, whereby certain genes are turned on by the experiences that the person has. I think that's what we're seeing. So multitasking will become just simply part of brain development, if you want to call it development, and it is a form of development. But as I said earlier, it tends to favor superficial approaches to knowledge rather than deep approaches. So you have to sort of balance it with more traditional ways of learning.
The last thing I want to ask you about is, what is your favorite form of mental exercise, just personally?
Well, one of which is simply going back in memory and trying to, you know, recite. It could be anything, boxing champions, starting with the current one all the way back as far as you go. And then something that you can check against objectively, not something, because if you can't check it objectively, then you don't know whether you're right or wrong. So that's what I like doing. Also working memory, as we talked earlier, I gave the exercise with the presidents. You don't have to use presidents. You can use anything.
Thank you, by the way, for not putting me on the spot with that one.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. I'm sure you would have done well. But in any area, there's always some area that you could do. Some people would do great with movie stars. They'd say, oh. And sometimes I try to think of how many athletes in a certain sport you can think of in a certain period of time and time yourself. That's a great exercise, by the way. Because it's semantic fluency. It's, in other words, you take a category, a semantic category, let's say baseball players, and you see how many names you can come up with in a minute. Time yourself. 15 is really good. 20 is terrific.
Dr. Richard Restak is a neuroscientist, neuropsychiatrist, and clinical professor of neurology at George Washington University's Medical Center. His new book is called Think Smart, A Neuroscientist's Prescription for Improving Your Brain's Performance. Richard, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for spending
the
hour
with
us.
Thank you. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
Thanks to all of you who have called to support KERA at 1-800-456-5372. We are excited to be able to offer Richard's book, Think Smart, A Neuroscientist's Prescription for Improving Your Brain's Performance. You can improve your public radio station at the same time when you call 1-800-456-5372, make a contribution of at least $120, and we'd love to be able to send that to you. Betsy Lewis is back. Hey, Betsy.
Hey, Chris. And one more thing that we want to emphatically remind you of is there is a $5,000 challenge to end the drive today from Diane Wanger, a Tarrant County family law attorney. That is very, very generous challenge. But KERA, just to emphasize it, will only get that $5,000 to end the drive today if we hear from you right now. So go online to kera.org if you haven't done so already, or call 1-800-456-5372. And whatever contribution, you know, you choose the amount here. So your contribution at any amount will go toward that $5,000 challenge.
It's kind of a win-win if you think about it.
It is a win-win to end the drive today, which I know that you're looking forward to. We are certainly looking forward to. We want to get you back to the full-time programming that we love to provide for you and that you count on hearing throughout all of North Texas.
Yeah, we want to go back to doing our jobs full time. I want to have the entire hour to talk to my guests instead of talking to you about money. But look, this is the honest way to run the radio station. We're not pretending anything here. We come to you. We know it takes a little time out of the programming, out of your day. But it's the only way we know how to raise the money from people who listen to the station. 1-800-456-5372 is the number. You can also go to kera.org. Lots of folks to thank, including Bruce Bonnet in Dallas, Michael Gipp in Irving, Robin Gary in Plano, Linda Ford in Dallas. Lots of you are joining on what we hope to be the last day. Some of you are making $1,000 contributions. Some of you are making $100 contributions and all in between. The amount that you spend is your business. But we would hope that you support our business in providing great radio for North Texas.
And that amount is established before the pledge drive even starts. So it is up to us to keep asking you to do your part and make a contribution. And until that certain amount is raised, we have to stay on the pledge drive path until we meet the needs of the station so that we can keep providing for you the standards that you have grown accustomed to, whether it's our local programming like Think, or also NPR's Morning Edition, All Things Considered, anything you ever wanted to know on Fridays from our senior producer, Jeff. This is your station. When you get right down to it, this station belongs to you. So 1-800-456-5372 is the magic number for you to show what just how much exactly KERA does mean to you every day on a daily basis. And if you'd like to go online, kera.org.
It's kind of like doing things, Betsy, the old-fashioned way. I think, you know, when we set our budget, we have folks down in the finance department. They don't leave that up to us on the content side, but they figure out exactly what it costs to pay the staff, to keep the equipment running, the lights on, to pay for national programming, to run KERA in the manner to which you have become accustomed and we have become accustomed. They figure that number out and then they say, okay, this is what you have to raise. In this case, for this drive, it was $600,000. And then, you know, in the same way that, you know, my parents back in the 70s, if they wanted a new couch, they saved up their money first and then they bought the new couch. That's sort of how it goes. We collect the money from you and then we give you that year of radio that you're counting on. We only come to you now three times a year with these fundraising drives, and we're all delighted about that. We know that you are too. But we need your support at 1-800-456-5372 for your source for NPR News, KERA 90.1 Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, and our online service at kera.org.
So choose an amount that's right for you. It could be the $120 level, $240, $365. And if you have already become a member, first of all, we want to thank you so much for that. But you also have the option of making an additional gift in any amount that you choose and continuing to show your support. We know that times are tough economically, and maybe you're not feeling that so much and you're able to give a little bit more than you normally would to compensate for someone who might normally be a member and be able to give, and maybe they're having a tougher time right now.
It's been remarkable how many people we've heard from that have said just that. You know, I'm happy to be working and I'm happy to be in a pretty good position, and therefore I take my responsibility to KERA particularly seriously right now. Because, you know, consider the fact that you know, if everybody else didn't give, KERA wouldn't be here. If more people make a choice to support it, even at a small level, then you know, we have even fewer drives maybe someday. We're not there yet, but we are in a position to possibly end the drive today, thanks to you, at 1-800-456-5372 or online at kera.org.
And remember, ending the drive today will also make happen that $5,000 challenge from Diane Wanger, the Tarrant County family law attorney. And it's great to hear that great shout out belief in KERA from Tarrant County, because this isn't just about Dallas. This is about Fort Worth, Arlington, Sherman, all of the surrounding...
Tyler, Wichita Falls.
Yes, Tyler, Wichita Falls. And there are so many great small Texas towns in between all of these cities that that support KERA just as emphatically as these big cities.
1-800-456-5372 is our telephone number, 1-800-456-KERA. You can also go online to KERA.org. All of those contributions count. You can set up a sustaining membership, which is a monthly thing, or you can do this with a credit or debit card. You can even send a personal check. We have $67,326 left to raise today, and then we'll receive that challenge grant of $5,000. Please help us make it happen. 1-800-456-5372.
Think is produced by Jeff Whittington and engineered by Jeannie Mascoro. Learn about upcoming programs, subscribe to our free daily podcast, and order CD copies of your favorite Think shows on the radio page of KERA.org. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@KERA.org.